The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 21st of April, 2021. On the podcast today, Dan Bett, CEO of Hummingbird Resources, provides an operational and trading update for the first quarter. Plus, he gives production guidance for 2021. Also, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about inflation and Anglo-Asian, Blue Rock Diamonds, Bushveld Minerals, Cornish Metals, Iron Ridge Resources, Makanga Resources, and also Zamare, which is a private company about to list. And as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists, of course, on the front page at voxmarkets.co.uk. We see lots of other content. There's an article there in Hummingbird. There's one there in Myriad Advertising. There's one there in Lexington Gold, Blue Star Capital. And there's a fund manager, in fact, just watching before I came on here, a fund manager, Andy Brough, with Paul Hill. Worth watching, definitely. And don't forget, always worth checking out the old COVID-19 index. I wonder how long that'll be around for. But the biggest rise today is Novacyt. It's having a bit of a fall of late after that dispute over the contract with the NHS. That's up 5.67% to 3.94. Biggest fall of there is Gfinity. It's annoying, the sellers in there. They'll come out eventually. Warrant holders, drip, drip, drip the sales. Once they're out, it'll pop. I say that, of course, I'm biased because I own Gfinity. GFL and I took it eSports, very hot area. So check that out, voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dan Bett, CEO of Hummingbird Resources. HUM is ticker. Dan, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Now, you've released a Q1 2021 production results and operational update, and we'll get into that. But as always, Dan, give us a brief summary as to what Hummingbird's about, because you've got lots of things going on there.
Hummingbird is a gold mining company with a producing asset called Yanfolila in Mali, which today we're announcing the Q1 results for. We also have a development project in Guinea called Karusa, and a development project in Liberia called Dubi that is being progressed by us in a joint venture. So, yeah, we've got a lot going on and a lot of news flow coming up, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go into the first production there, Q1 release this morning. Can you take us through some of the key highlights and then we'll look at the expectations and outlook, if you could?
Yeah, sure. So in the quarter, we poured 22,781 ounces of gold. And that was done at an AISC of $1,494 an ounce. On a flat run rate, if you extrapolate that, it obviously comes in below our annual guidance, but it's entirely consistent, Justin, with our expectation, and we're maintaining our guidance because we expect production to increase and AISC to drop as the year progresses now. I think as we clearly highlighted at the end of last year, we've been going through a period of high strip and as a result, higher costs, lower grade in the ore body. And that has largely played out over the last two quarters. But I think actually, despite what it may appear like on the surface, I think actually site's performing very well at the moment. If you look at the plant performance, throughput rates, we've transitioned to a new mining contractor during the quarter, which is a huge transition for any mining operation. And we've moved from AMS, Australian Mining Services, to Junction Mining, who are really getting stuck in and performing well. Initial mining volumes are actually up immediately, which is a great result. So in terms of the numbers, I mean, that's really the main headline, Justin, is the ounces produced in the ASIC. But we've also appointed a new chief operating officer for the group called Anthony Cokin, who previously was GM at Bisha Mine and then chief operating officer for AMS, African operations across Africa. And he comes with a huge amount of experience and he will be supporting the team driving efficiencies and improving performance at Yanfolila and also obviously as we ramp up development at Karusa. So there's been a lot going on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just looking at the figures there, I mean, it seems to me that, you know, Q1, you know, went well, but it seems like everything's improving from here. You're saying production is going up, ASIC is going down, and also it's worth talking about the debt there, because you're almost debt-free now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to remember the company is, it's got $4.6 million of debt left. That will be fully repaid this quarter, and it's net cash and it's producing cash. So despite the Q1 production numbers, during the quarter, we generated cash. We spent $2 million on exploration in Mali. We spent over $1 million on the development studies and work at Karusa. And we've done a lot of the sustaining capital in the project in terms of things like the tailings dam lift. There's an awful lot of work going on, and the balance sheet is continuing to strengthen. So, I think if you can look through the initial numbers, I think Hummingbird's in a very strong position, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned their new COO. Okay, so let's really focusing on the operations there, driving that forward. So you discussed in the recent release about unrest in the township of Karusa, directed at government authorities. Can you give a bit more, you know, colour on that and any impacts it could have on development plans there, please, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, look, security is obviously a big issue for any mining company in the region, and there is an awful lot of dynamic situations to be aware of at any given time. I mean, unfortunately, in the region of Karusa and Karusa Town last week, there was rioting and looting that was promoted by what I understand to be a group of illegal artisanal miners from Burkina Faso in the region, and the local mining communities were pretty unhappy about this, and they had a set to with the local law and order forces, and I think it's ended now, and I think calm has been restored to the region, but I think it's been a pretty unfortunate affair. Security is paramount for us to operate anywhere, for our people and for the environment. So I'm actually heading down to West Africa next week. Hopefully I'll meet the Minister of Mines in Guinea. And, you know, in terms of impact on our operations, Justin, there isn't any.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not mobilised there. We don't anticipate any impact to us, to our timelines, budgets, anything. But always something to be mindful of, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, if anything, security, government security will be stepped up, won't it, I suppose?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think they take this very seriously. But, yeah, it's not, yeah. It's one of those things.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's move on to Dubin in Liberia there. The project looks to be progressing towards definitive feasibility study by Earning Partners. That's Pasofino. When should we expect a completion of that, Dan?
Well, I think that the timetable hasn't changed in that they're expecting the DFS by the end of the year. They are, I think, four rigs are turning at the moment in Tuzon. They've done everything they've said to date. I mean, all the infrastructure, roads, camps, everything was finished, and they've been working hard on drilling lately. I think the story's been slow because it's taken a while to get the drills turning and get into the geology and the studies. But I think we can expect to see numbers coming out quite soon. We don't need to wait till the end of the year for a feasibility study. I think Pasofino will start bringing out drill results and maybe sort of some preliminary economic numbers quite soon.
Yeah, yeah. And so just look at news flow over the next, say, next quarter, next 6 months, what can we expect?
Well, I mean, I think drilling results at Yanfolila, because we're spending good money on exploration there, looking to extend the mine life. And as we've previously released, we've got some excellent exploration results coming in from Sanamali East and around the license area. So we'll continue to bring news to our exploration at Yanfolila. Hopefully in Guinea, we will be able to announce the award of our mining license soon, which is a big milestone in the ability to take that project forward. And obviously, as we move towards development, releasing numbers on that Karusa project, which is coming together well, and news flow on the Dubi project as Pasofino developed there. So I think there's lots of news flow, but the main event for us this year, as we've always said, is to showcase stabilized production at Yanfolila and numbers that people can believe in and trust.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's been a double bottom in the gold chart. Do you know what that means? It's basically it's very good, I think, because on the 8th of March, gold hit 1678. Then it bounced up and came back down, retested that on the 30th of March. Didn't go quite as low, so a higher low there, and now it's starting to climb. That's quite bullish. I think that's the bottom there temporarily, you know, so we may see a steady climb from here. That's good, isn't it?
Well, look, I really hope so. I mean, I remain a bull. I can't understand why the gold price hasn't moved more strongly. But, I mean, there are forces above our pay grade, Justin, at work here. So, I mean, let's hope it does go up.
Yeah, I think you probably see yourself in Bitcoin and gold will go up, I think. Okay, so as always, Dan, three reasons. Someone's liking the sound of the progress you're making but are not yet following the story. Three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add Hummingbird Resources to their watch list, please.
Well, I think Hummingbird is in a strong position. It's cash generative. It has an organic pipeline of growth. It's stabilizing production at Yanfolila that is set to improve and continue. Exploration results are looking good. And there's lots of news flow coming from the project, from our development projects and our JV partners. So actually, I think it's a good time for Hummingbird, really.
Yeah. Marvelous stuff. Good to chat you, Dan, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. I got to say, John's got a bit of verve about it, a bit of zest, a bit of zeal. He's a bit of passion there. And I sense, halfway through the conversation before we hit the record button, you told me you're in the office. It's almost like, John, you know, humans, we need that interaction because you do sound a bit more upbeat, you know, a bit perky.
It's very nice to be back in the office. There's no doubt about that. And we went out for a couple of sherbets last night in Soho. And there was good fun. There were thousands of people out in Kingly Street, all enjoying the weather and outdoor dining. And in fact, you know, we almost had a continental feel about it.
Yeah. Did you worry at any time that we thought we'd take this a bit fast? Are you vaccinated? I mean, did you think, oh, hang on a sec, the amount of crowds out here, you know, the virus could be spreading again quickly. Are you worried about that?
I'm vaccinated. I feel that the risk of contracting the virus outdoors is very low. We've got the windows open in the office, so we've got good airflow. Airflow is so essential because so long as you dilute the virus, then you're not likely to catch it at all.
Yeah.
I think the government's worked out that actually outdoor entertainment, dining, all of that sort of thing is very low risk. They said, okay, pop concerts, rock concerts, where everyone's close together and drinking beer is a higher risk.
Spitting and shouting on each other and snogging,
People enjoying dining, drinking outside at a sensible distance is perfectly fine. Everyone should just go out and enjoy themselves, and particularly enjoy themselves in the sunshine, get the vitamin D, be more healthy, you know, get out and about. We've all been locked up for way too long.
Did you have a sense at all last night when you saw quite a lot of people out there? Did you have a sense at all that, you know, we were going too fast on this or not? Or did you feel quite safe?
I felt we were going a little bit fast on it. There were crowds of people. And I think, you know, people need to be a little bit more careful with it. But actually, it felt okay.
Well, do you know what? If you look at the figures, though, I mean, we've now been down, I mean, testing's happening at a rapid amount, you know, and we've now been down, what, almost 10 days? We've been sort of this part of the tier unlocking. And hospital admissions are still coming down. Deaths are still coming down, so it's no panic as yet. I mean, it may take a while, but we shouldn't be worried anymore about, you know, about the infection rates, because if you look at it, there's 80% of 80-year-olds were the ones who were in hospital, pretty much. So they've all been vaccinated, and the vaccination is amazing. 33 million, that's half the population, and 10 million have had the second dose. So that's amazing, isn't it? And as long as you've got that level of protection and people are a bit careful, I think it's all good to go. But
I think there's a balance. Look, I think the mental well-being is important. It's important to socialise and interact with your friends and your colleagues.
I can hear it, John, in your voice. You're loving it. It's almost a loving life again.
But young people should remember that long COVID is a very serious issue. My daughter had COVID before Christmas, and she still seems to be suffering some effects from that. And she didn't have it badly, that's for sure. So I think people should still be careful. But they should also enjoy themselves at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so of course, you're going to weigh it up, haven't you? Okay, let's talk about stocks and stuff. Inflation, in fact, it's sort of linked, I suppose, in some way. You know, people are getting back out there in the economy, spending money on oil, petrol, all that stuff. So you're going to say, oh, someone just calling in there on the inflation line. So what's happening with inflation, John?
The inflation is coming at us. I mean, the deflationary effects of cheap goods from China, I think, is going to give away to inflation being passed through from higher commodity prices. That's just a good excuse for manufacturers to pass inflation through. Utilization rates at factories are lower than they were, we think, not necessarily in China, but in other parts of the world, particularly with social distancing that's going on. And we can see services are also raising costs because their own costs have gone up. So, you know, restaurants and bars can't have so many people in them. So in order to pay for the chefs and the service staff, they've got to spread that over a smaller number of customers. It means that the costs have to go up. And I think consumers are happy to pay a bit more. They've got a bit more cash in their pockets because they've been locked down for so long. And everybody's happy to have a bit of a splurge. So that is just naturally inflationary anyway.
Yeah. And that's good, though, isn't it? If you're, you know, in explorers and miners and stuff like that.
Yes, I think that's good. I think the world is happy to have a bit of inflation. And I think policymakers are not going to stamp on this because governments have been raising their own debt levels. And one of the ways of dealing with that is to allow that debt to be inflated away. It's like war bonds. War bonds effectively got inflated away over many years because nobody ever wants to pay the debt back. So the best way to sort this problem out is to allow a bit of inflation to come through. I think interest rates are hopefully going to stay low because, of course, otherwise the cost of servicing that government debt is going to rise. And let's face it, there are slightly less old people around to look after these days. So the pushback against interest rates staying low is probably going to be less than what it was. So, you know, that's a bit tougher on the old people who survived and are still running around. But let's face it, politicians tend to sing to the tune of the greater part of the population.
Yeah. You've got to have a bit of inflation to keep things going. So, okay, let's start off with companies in alphabetical order. Anglo-Asian Mining, of course, inflation seems good for gold. What's happening there, John?
Yeah, inflation very good for gold, and gold prices have continued to rise. Which is nice to see. I mean, gold was hit by Bitcoin going up so much, and I think Bitcoin came back at the weekend, quite a severe pullback, in fact. So that must have shaken confidence there. Gold prices taking off again, and with rising inflation, gold is likely to do very good. And companies like Anglo Asian, which have done very well, are talking about expansion and that sort of thing. So the news from Anglo Asian was relating to the extension of licenses in Azerbaijan. And the company's really proved itself in Azerbaijan. It's performed very nicely. It's overcome all challenges to do with metallurgy and things like that. And you've got to hand it to them. As a technical team, they are first class, and they have the ability to expand with new discoveries there. And I'm optimistic for their future.
Yeah. Well, do you know what, John? Look at the chart of gold earlier. So I was chatting to Hummingbird Resources, and it's done what's called a double bottom formation. Now, that is generally very good. I'll explain what's happened there. So let me just get the chart up here. So it, on the, what was it, 8th of March, it hit a low of $16.73 there. And then it bounced, had a nice big up day the next day, which is always a good sign. And it rose pretty much over the next few weeks to close to, well, $1,750. Then came back down and retested that low, but didn't go as low as the previous low. And then had another strong day after that, so it bounced again. And now it's starting to grind up, and it's above the 50-day moving average, and the RSI relative strength index is up. So that suggests, it could suggest, strong probability that gold has seen its temporary bottom there. And so that's a good sign for that, I think.
Well, look, I'm a fundamentalist rather than a chartist, but what I do always find is that the charts help to crystallize your thoughts on what you think what is likely to happen more fundamentally. And you're right. I think that that formation looks very positive from a gold price appreciation perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool. Next one you want to talk about there is Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. I don't know what song that was, but Blue Rock Diamonds, BRD.
Yeah. Blue Rock Diamonds, I'm very keen on this stock. I mean, it's a small company, but it produces nice quality diamonds. In fact, they're selling diamonds for over $400 a carat on average through the first quarter. Production rates are rising. Big expansion planned for this year. They pulled back the guidance slightly to 750,000 tons of throughput. And they reckon they'll average something over 4 carats per 100 tons. Now, I know that sounds like looking for a needle in a haystack, but that works. That's their recovery rate. But the key here is that they find very nice quality diamonds, and every quarter they seem to be finding two or three particularly large stones, which they then announce individually. And the last three sold for something like $230,000. I forget the number exactly, but so they get good, very good values, very nice stones. I think they'll make $11 to $12 million of sales this year, and the margin on that should be somewhere between 40% and 50%. Difficult to know right now, but I'm pretty excited about the prospects for this company, and I'd like to own some of this myself.
Lovely stuff. Okay, well, go on then. Okay. Next one. John likes your Bushveld. What's happening with the Bushveld, John?
Oh, well, look, Bushveld is a great company and they continue to raise production, but they've been hit by an unofficial stoppage at the Vametco site or plant in South Africa. And, like, what a chore. So it's not an official union stoppage. They're engaged with the unions who are trying to persuade the workers to go back to work. Mm-hmm. But the workers were sold this employee scheme, and that employee scheme, it had a tough time last year because there wasn't the profit. The company simply wasn't making the profits. So the guys see that there's not so much money in that employing scheme, and they've gone out on an unofficial strike in order to protest. So I don't know if there'll be some sort of settlement. Management were expecting them to go back to work pretty quickly. Haven't seen any announcement on that. So it'll pull everything back a little bit this year, and it's such a shame because vanadium prices have been rising very nicely over the last few months, and I expect vanadium prices to go higher because China continues to import more and more, and now Europe and America are ramping up their steel production and starting to compete with China to get hold of stocks of vanadium. So for me, prices are going to go higher. And the other side to Bushveld, which is particularly interesting, is the vanadium redox batteries. And so they are investing in a business called Enerox, and so they'll be a sort of semi, not quite fully integrated producer for on the battery technology side of things, but not far off it. And so that I like that model. I particularly like the sort of well to wheel type business, which worked very well for De Beers and for Alcan over the years. And I think Bushveld can do it. It's just taking a bit of time to push that through.
Mm-hmm. More stuff. Okay, so Bushveld. Cornish Metals. You mentioned there's something going on Twitter. What's happening, John?
Yes, they tweeted yesterday something on they were talking about cuprite in Mineral Core at United Downs, and so they didn't exactly say that. They showed a picture on Twitter. They didn't exactly say that this picture came from the core that they've been drilling, because they started drilling a few days ago. But one had the feeling that there was an implication that maybe the picture had come from that core, because it wasn't specific. And of course, on Twitter, they're not allowed to use very many. You can't use very many words either. But one has the feeling that things are getting quite excited over there. And I'm certainly very. You know, we know that they got good copper and tin grades in the initial drilling at United Downs, and we're hoping that they'll get more of that. So I'm pretty interested to see what the results are, and I quite like to see a statement, an official statement with photographs of what that call looks like. So let's hope that they put that out.
Yes, because they're flying close to the wind here, and they're doing that on Twitter.
It felt well, they weren't specific about what that picture was, but yes, possibly.
Yeah. Okay. So is this when was this? Was this today or yesterday? Was it?
This was yesterday.
Drilling gave us cuprite soft heavy red oxide. Is that what it is? That picture of that oxide there, and a minor copper ore formed by the weathering of copper sulfide minerals. Okay. Cool.
Yeah, so this is a quite a high grade copper mineral. It wouldn't necessarily tell you that anything was economic, but it's the sort of thing geologists get pretty excited about. And yes, if I was running the project, I would want to tell everybody about it pretty damn quick.
Well, yeah, 48 people liked that, and 9 retweeted it. So cool. Okay, marvelous. And what else we talk about there? Hang on, I didn't really get my list up here. I was looking at the pictures there. Iron Ridge Resources, you said some good news out, and what do you think? You did mention comparing it to peers as well.
Yeah, more nice grades on the lithium project that they have in Ghana. And remember, Ghana is part of the European Union in some sort of trade aspects, so it's a good place to operate in. And Iron Ridge and Kodal Minerals, you know, these are the best lithium projects around, frankly. So I think Iron Ridge is going to get a lot of support. Kodal are talking to the Chinese at the moment, so we'll see what happens there. And I believe that the management at Kodal are talking to various parts of Sinohydro and Power China. So it feels like things are coming closer to fruition. But going back to Iron Ridge, yes, you know, this project is getting bigger and bigger. It's very well placed because it's on the coast of Ghana, so shipping to China is lower cost than some others, and pretty easy to do, frankly. So yeah, I think this is a project that people should be focusing on these two companies if they want to invest in lithium in the London market.
Yeah. But you mentioned how does it compare then to others?
No, it compares very nicely. Well, the grades are very good. Mm. You know, I mean, the thing about spodumene projects is a lot of it is about grade and quality. You don't want too much mica in the ore because that creates a lot of dust in the furnaces, and that's inefficient, and it's not good from a health and safety perspective. And we know the Chinese are becoming more and more focused on buying better quality ores, and you know, so that they are more energy efficient and that they are less polluting. And that's good because China has been horrendously polluting over the last couple of decades. And so projects like Iron Ridge's project and Kodal's project, I think, are going to be preferred over many others.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. Lovely. Cool. Okay. And do we have any others? Oh, there's Macango. What happened there, John? MKA.
I think worth talking about because they've just appointed a US advisory firm to help connect with the US government. And, you know, this doesn't sound like an exciting headline to start with, but what they're doing is they're tapping into the US government strategy to develop the rare earth supply chain outside China, because they realize that 80% of the world's rare earths come from China at the moment, and they need to develop not only supply sources that are outside China, but also refining. And I think Macango is going to be a part of that strategy. So appointing the right advisors to connect with the Biden administration, I think, is very important. And hopefully they'll get a part of that $2 trillion infrastructure that Biden is trying to push through.
Yeah, more stuff. Cool. And there's one other you want to mention. Zamare? It's non-listed. It's going to be listed, isn't it, Freddy?
Zamare, yeah. It's a private company. We're looking to list this later this year. They just raised another £630,000 for exploration in Zambia. One of their projects is in joint venture with Rio Tinto, who are paying for all the exploration on that. That project is next to the Mufulira mine in Zambia. And Mufulira has been a huge mine over the years. I mean, it's got high costs now because it goes down about a couple of kilometres. And I don't know. I'd never heard of anybody mining copper at that sort of depth before. So, well done on the Zambians for actually achieving that. But I think there's a lot more copper to be discovered at surface in Zambia. Quite excited about that sort of thing. And I'm helping, you know, we know that the world is going to need a lot more copper for the electrification of electric vehicles and charging points. And to be honest, there's going to be a lot of copper required for cabling up the offshore wind farms that have been built, not just in the UK, but all, you know, in many parts of the world, China, South Korea, United States. You can be sure that Biden is going to direct a lot of that $2 trillion infrastructure money towards massive offshore wind farms. And they're now talking about windmills, wind turbines of up to 15 megawatts a turbine, which is huge. I mean, that will power, they power hundreds of thousands of houses each these days. They'll of course need lots of battery backup from lithium and vanadium redox batteries and one or two other crazy ideas for battery storage. So I'm looking at a number of private investment opportunities. I've got one in Chile I'm looking at the moment, which I think is particularly interesting. It's very exciting exploration project. So if anybody is interested in that, hopefully they'll come and list again later this year or maybe sometime next year. Because I think there's quite big upside to be made on some of these. And I've put my own money into Zemere, and I'm putting my own money into this other one in Chile and probably anything else I can get my hands on in the copper space.
Yeah, like in copper, cool. And when is this going to be listed, John, you think?
Well, look, it all depends on how well the work goes, but Zemere, I'm sure we'll list later this year. The other one in Chile, that might take a bit longer because it takes just, you know, drilling projects in the Chilean Andes take a bit more time. Cost is higher as well because of the altitude. You're up at 4,200 meters up there. But, you know, at least they're good miners in Chile. They know what they're doing. All the services are available. So stuff gets done. I mean, there are some parts of the world which aren't so good, where it is actually technically harder to work. So it's all part of the great, you know, the mix of what makes a project work and what doesn't. But I think the good people behind these things. So yeah, I'm quite hopeful going forwards.
More stuff. Excellent, John. Lots of coverage there. And hopefully, fella, we'll speak you next week.
Look forward to it, Justin. Thank you.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Avacta. Good news yesterday on their test and validation there. That's up 5%, 257. At four, Landor Resources. It's at down 3% at 336.25. At three, Savannah Resources, down 20% pretty much to 4 pence that they're placing. At 2, Valerian Blockchain, non-mover at 29 pence. And at 1, Argo Blockchain, 167.5. That's up 15.5%. Of course, it had a bit of sell-off, bit of a rally now. Bitcoin has fallen a bit, but maybe hitting some support levels here. So we'll see which way it goes. Okay, it's time for the top 5 most red RNSs. They are as follows. At 5, Tirupati Graphite. Bitumini Mine opens. I have every problem pronouncing everything to do with that company. GS Technologies, MAU with WisePay MPay. At 3, Cimec Atlantis Energy, holdings and company. At 2, Gunsind, new investment, MediaTek, SPAC. And at 1, Argo Blockchain. Argo engages Navier to develop its Texas facility. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.